You may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Baron Kraken. I'm here on behalf of Mr. Williams. This matter comes on appeal by assignment of Erickson Court of Appeals that originated from a criminal trial in the city of Norfolk. There are two assignments of error. The one that was originally before the Court of Appeals is essentially that the conclusion of the Commonwealth's evidence, the venue had not been established. Coming up from the Court of Appeals, by way of affirming the trial court's judgment, they've ruled that by implication the court had taken judicial notice that the location of the drug transaction was within the city of Norfolk.
Can we agree on what this case is not, first? You agree that this case is not whether the trial court had the authority to take judicial notice. You agree with that?
No, sir. That's what it is not about. That is clearly what it is not about. When we did this in the earlier proceeding in this court, I noted this is fairly standard trial practice. This is something that goes on every day in the criminal courts all over the Commonwealth. The first problem is this is a published decision coming out of the court.
Let's agree as to what the case is about before you start moving on. All right? It's not about whether the trial court had the authority.
No, sir, it is not.
So this case is about whether or not the trial court actually did take judicial notice.
That was the issue. That is clearly the issue here based on what the court appealed.
And a subset of that is whether or not an appellate court can look at that and infer from the action taken in the face of the motion itself that the trial court must have.
Yes, sir. That's the assignment of error to the specific ruling of the Court of Appeals. Yes,
right.
Sir.
Go ahead.
I had hoped I had been clear enough, but of course assignments of error these days seem to be a hot topic, at least among a lot of folks that do appellate work. Specifically, that is the problem with the Court of Appeals decision. What happened here, and the facts themselves are very straightforward. My client got picked up by a narcotics detective on a street that was identified as being located in the city of Norfolk. That's O'Keefe Street. He was directed, according to the officer, to drive to Fremont Street, which was not identified as being within the city limits of Norfolk, where the drug transaction took place. They then drove back over to O'Keefe Street in the city of Norfolk, where my client was arrested. At the end of the government's case, a motion was made to strike, one on evidentiary grounds, which is not before the court, and the other on the grounds of venue not established. The prosecutor in the case basically said, in her argument in addressing the motion to strike on the venue question, well, Judge, you can infer from the officer's testimony of short distance and short duration that this was still within the city of Norfolk, and you can take judicial notice of that. The judge's only response to that observation was motion denied. Now, based on that,
have you ever been to Bristol, Virginia?
Yes, sir, I have.
It's a very, very short distance to Tennessee.
Yeah, basically, if you go across the street to the general store, you're there.
Here's what I want you to focus on. We have this case, I'll pronounce it Kessee, K-E-S-E-E.
And I think that is what governs what should be the proper outcome.
Well, it does provide some interesting arguments on your behalf. Because in that case, the trial court was asked to take judicial notice that Hill's Department Store was in the city of Lynchburg. Now, if I told you that something happened at the President of the United States' residence at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, I don't think anybody would quarrel that the whole world should take judicial notice that that's in Washington, D.C.
Well, and apparently at some time there's an earlier case where this court noted that everybody knows that the Jefferson Hotel is in the city of Richmond. I'll have to tell you, that would have been a mystery to me, but I don't come to Richmond that often.
Well, but that's what I'm going to, because the Kissy case, and perhaps the Commonwealth will have the opportunity to respond, that case says that there has to be evidence offered to prove that the geographical facts are matters of common knowledge, one, or that there is a map of some sort that is generally known that can locate this place. In this case, I understand that all the Commonwealth offered was they took a short ride.
Well, and of course, the truth of point one is the officer didn't even say that. There's nothing in the officer's testimony that said this transaction lasted 5 minutes or 15 minutes or 3.5 hours. He didn't say we drove a distance of a mile and a half or six city blocks. He said we went over there and then we came back over here, essentially was his description of how this transaction took place. Well, if you're located in the city of Norfolk, if you drive over there, within 5 minutes, you can get to at least four different jurisdictions within the Commonwealth of Virginia. And if you drive about 20 miles, you can be in North Carolina. And depending on how fast you put the accelerator down, that doesn't take very long. The problem is there was no description other than a street name.
But and don't we have a case, Hart versus Commonwealth, where we upheld the court because there was a street, just on the basis of a street name?
Well, there wasn't just a street name, and the real question was whether it was located in the city in Hart. It was a real question of where the city was, and they determined that it was in the city of, I believe in Hart, the issue was Staunton, and I think that's Augusta County. But I think one of the first things is a frame of reference. You know, the question in Hart was whether the court could take judicial notice looking at a map, whether this court could take judicial notice. Now, that's come up finally. That's never been asked. That was not asked of the Court of Appeals. And the Court of Appeals, sua sponte, had suggested that as a matter of common knowledge, because they cited a case about the Skyline Drive, which is it was a little different than Fremont Street. I mean, keep in mind, when you're talking about what's general knowledge, when you talk about where the State House is in Richmond, if they said it happened in the State House grounds, I don't think I could fairly argue that, you know, it's just, as, you know, when you said that put it in the city of Richmond and would give the appropriate circuit court jurisdiction. Fremont Street doesn't fall in that general category, so we have to reference a map of some kind. Now, the earlier case before Hart, I think, was a 1922 case. There was a West case, which is cited in the Panisi case, which was in 1919. But one thing to remember about looking at these earlier precedents, the significance of those are whether this court can now pull out a map. The Attorney General has suggested you look at Google. I'm not so sure that's a map of general observation, but I heard all the discussion about computers a while ago, so I'm not going to get too far into that. But the difficulty when you look at those earlier cases is quite, in those days, they considered that a matter of jurisdiction, and it could be raised for the first time in front of the Supreme Court. When you look at the cases, it's not clear whether in Hart they ever raised it with the trial court. Clearly in West, the earlier case in 1919, where they used the map to pretty much do the same thing they did in Hart, there, it was clear that it was raised in trial court, but it was raised after verdict. In fact, that's one of the things Panisi notes. These things are supposed these days. And another important case that's cited by the...
So let me make sure I understand your argument. If the Norfolk trial court judge is sitting there and the officer says, I picked him up on whatever the first street was, and I drove to...
Fremont is the street where the transaction took place.
I drove to Fremont. If the Norfolk Circuit Court judge is sitting there and he or she knows that Fremont is totally contained within the city of Norfolk, your position is that the court can't take...
Certainly the trial court could have done that, but it didn't.
I'm not sure if the court can. Let's ask that. Be careful given
well,
that.
I'm sorry, Judge. I apologize.
What these judicial notice things are things that are known to everybody. And that's why judicial knowledge, it's like reputation evidence. You don't get to say, well, sure, I know George and he's untrustworthy. You don't get to do that. In reputation evidence, you get to say, do you know his reputation in the community? It's broader. And in all the cases that I see have that kind of aspect to it. It's of common knowledge that the White House is in Washington, D.C. It's of common knowledge that Skyline Drive is in Shenandoah National Park. Now, where does that give a trial judge to say, well, you all may not know it, but I do?
Well, Judge, I guess, probably the Randall decision, and that's cited both in my brief and hers. Randall basically was a location of a halfway house, and I've forgotten what jurisdiction it was in, but it's a 1944 case. Basically, in Randall, the trial judge said the issue came up, well, we haven't established where the crime was committed, but it was committed at this halfway house, and he certified on the record that he knew that the halfway house was located in that particular county. And it's cited in both briefs. And basically, this court on that basis said that it may not be common knowledge to this court that would allow anybody on this court to take judicial notice of it. But when the trial judge certified as being a member of the locality and being well aware, sort of like where the First Baptist Church in the city of Norfolk is, for instance, that the trial judge would be aware of that, and therefore if he certified that he was aware of it and it was commonly known within that jurisdiction, that this court would accept that certification. That's what Randall essentially says. And I guess the position I'm in here is looking, and given the position I've taken all along, first off, I think it's incumbent first to make certain that this court says what the Court of Appeals did about inferring judicial notice cannot be right, because the defendant was not on notice that they were doing it or on what basis he was taking it, so he couldn't object on that. The first problem we have here is the trial judge didn't take judicial notice. Contrary to what the Court of Appeals said, he clearly did not take judicial notice. He didn't articulate anything that suggested that he knew where Fremont Street was, or that he even recognized that he was going to look at a map or go back to his chambers and Google something. He didn't say anything. He said motion denied. And I mean, by precedent of both this court and the Court of Appeals, that simply cannot be done. The defendant had no ability to object, but he didn't know the judge was doing it. And I mean, that's the fundamental thing with the judicial notice. And
well, Edmund says that the trial court does not have to intone the magic words judicial notice. In order to take notice of a fact, the evidence, the arguments of the parties, and the statements of the trial court must demonstrate clearly that the trial court has taken judicial notice. Commonwealth makes a motion. Judge, you can take judicial notice of where Fremont Street is. Court says, motion denied.
Well, I mean, that may be some inference you could draw, but on the other hand, the argument one in this case the Commonwealth made wasn't that you can refer to a map of common knowledge or everybody in the city of Norfolk knows it's Fremont. What she said is you can infer from the fact that he said it was a short drive and took a short period of time, which is a factual basis and is not a proper basis for judicial notice. I mean, the judge, there's no magic incantation, apparently, to take judicial notice, although I'll have to say, I understand we want to give a lot of leeway to trial judges in the heat of battle sometimes. But I mean, I don't know how you clearly articulate and take a judicial notice without saying something that tells both parties what you're doing. The judge clearly didn't do that here. You know, he clearly didn't say what his basis was. I mean, one of the other components of judicial notice is he's got to say what he's basing it on. Did I drive by there every day? Or that I know everybody in the city of Norfolk knows where that is. It's a famous landmark. Or, you know, I've got a map here that the Commonwealth's offered. There wasn't any of that. So clearly, just saying motion denied didn't meet the fundamental requirements of taking judicial notice.
All right, assume for a moment that you're correct. Venue, in many cases, is not an element of the offense.
It is not an element here.
All right, so would this case be remanded for a new trial?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right. Well, at least we
and I think one of the things I was going to say for rebuttal time for it, I say he hadn't saved very much, was to note this new request for judicial notice asked for by the Attorney General. I think one of the questions there is, now she's offering you a map and asking you to close the barn door, and the cow's been running down the road for a long time now, because we did this through several increments at the Court of Appeals and now a couple of times here. My suggestion is this is not a situation where now that they at the 11th hour where they hand you a map and say, well, look, you do what the trial judge didn't do. Go ahead and take judicial notice. I think one of the things Kinesi stands for, too, is that these matters are properly resolved at the trial court level if it's timely made. You know, one of the concerns, and the Court of Appeals echoed this in some of its language, is that, look, this was just mere inadvertence by the part of the prosecutor or inattentive trial judge, and it really is not a matter of any substance. But what Kinesi says, and I think Randall says it as well a little early on, now that this is not a jurisdictional matter that the defendant can pop up at any time in the process and say, wait a minute, they never showed this happened in Norfolk. Now that it is a matter that has to be timely raised and it is to be resolved at the trial court level. We've been going on now for a year before we determine whether this thing actually happened in Norfolk or not. I think what Kinesi stands for is also the principle that if you're going to take judicial notice, it's to be resolved in a proper fashion before the trial court. It's not to be at at this late stage, proper for this court to come in and say, we'll look at a map and try to figure it out. Clearly, there was not, and I think that the whole basis of the Court of Appeals position was there was not enough evidence absent judicial notice to infer this happened in the city of Norfolk. There wasn't any detailed description about driving two blocks this way and three blocks that way. We went over there and came back over here is all we had.
All right. Your time has expired.
Thank you very much.
May it please the Court, Lauren Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. This case is only about whether there is enough evidence in the record to establish that the City of Norfolk had proper venue over the committed offense.
I don't think so. This case is about whether a trial judge can, by actions, not rule on a question, and then the Court of Appeals say, by inference, we think he found judicial notice.
I think that is the first assignment of error, and the first part of it is the judicial notice issue. The Commonwealth asserts that the Court of Appeals correctly did find that the record explicitly shows that what the trial court did was take judicial notice after the Commonwealth made the request in her argument. The standard for reviewing this, because judicial notice is a fact that must appear on the record, and the Court of Appeals made this factual finding essentially that the record was sufficient to show that that is what happened, the Court of Appeals decision should be affirmed unless it is plainly wrong or without evidence to support it. And the evidence that does support it is that it appears the Commonwealth asked the trial court to take this judicial notice, and she makes in her argument in response to the motion.
But see, the Commonwealth didn't say anything that provides a basis for the judge to take judicial notice, so you can't get over the hurdle that it was by inference if there wasn't even a basis to do it in the first place. The Commonwealth attorney said, Judge, I'd like you to take a judicial notice because, you know, I was reading the Farmer's Almanac this morning, and, I think there was something in there about that. Would that be would you infer that the judge said, well, sure, I'll take judicial notice that this is in the city of Norfolk? The answer's got to be no. So what do you get to so that the answer is yes? You look through our case law, and it's over and over again, it's commonly known in the community, or it's easily discernible by reference to a map. And, Your Honor, here's the map. That's not in this case.
Well, first, Your Honor, to start by answering your question, to determine the question of venue based on the facts proved and the fair inferences from those facts proven in light of judicial knowledge, what you have here, what has been proven in the record, is this 800 Fremont Street address, which is how this case is different from the Kesey case, which says Hill's Department Store. If, for example, what happened here, like Hill's Department Store, someone said, oh, this happened at Macy's, but there's no testimony. There's plenty of bases. There's no testimony to help pinpoint where that is. That address is what does it in this case. So this testimony, which is that this happened at 800 Fremont Street in the record, and in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, the encounter was of short duration from the other address, which was explicitly testified to as being in short duration. The address is what makes this case different. The short duration makes it so it closes the reasonable inference that this 800 Fremont Street wasn't 800 Fremont Street thousands of miles from here. It's the one in the city of Norfolk.
Well, it might be interesting if you were talking about the distance between 800 Fremont Street and 200 Fremont Street. So all of a sudden, now you've got a series of blocks you can calculate, but that's not what this is. This is from a different street altogether.
Correct, Your Honor.
So how's that? I mean, where is the evidence here that what the judge that you're suggesting took by inference, where is the evidence that it's commonly known to anybody?
Well, it can be commonly known or readily ascertainable from a map, which is, I think...
Where's the map?
I could be wrong, Your Honor, but I do not believe there's a requirement. That's exactly why we have judicial notice, so that the Commonwealth doesn't
You can't just stand up and say, Judge, I want you to take judicial notice of this. There's got to be some standards. First of all, you have to give the other side the opportunity to rebut whatever it is you say.
Certainly, Your Honor. And I think to that point, the defendant did have the opportunity. It's clear from the record exactly the Commonwealth asks for the judicial notice. And at that point, that is when the defendant is put on notice that the Commonwealth is asking for the judge to take judicial notice that venue is proper and that they remained in the city of Norfolk for the entire transaction at 800 Fremont Street. That gives the defendant both the notice and the opportunity to object to those facts. In the record, the trial court says, oh, anything else? No, Your Honor. Motion's denied. That is the opportunity for the defendant to object.
To the short distance, we drove a short distance away? Is that the basis of the Commonwealth case?
No, Your Honor. It's the address as well. And that they remained in the city of Norfolk for the entirety of the car drive between the two addresses.
But you really are bootstrapping it, that the address, it's the address, 800 Fremont Street. So what? Is it commonly known in Norfolk that 800 Fremont Street is in the city? Where's the evidence of that? Was there a map given to the judge that said, Judge, here's a map of the city. You can take judicial notice that this was in... Not that either. Well, the only thing the Commonwealth has then is that the officer drove, quote, a short way. So that's your case.
I think that goes to... The second, respectively, Your Honor, I think that goes to the second part of the case, is whether or not there was a strong presumption of venue based on the totality of the facts and the record alone. And even though it only stated it in a footnote, the Court of Appeals did find that there was a strong presumption based on the facts of venue. And I think that finding is also entitled to deference by this court.
How do you draw the presumption? From what? You have to draw it from something.
You draw it based on the two addresses and the short time of... I know I'm repeating myself, but that is what you draw it from, the addresses and the short duration.
So now we're back to the same thing that the Commonwealth relies on, the testimony we drove a short ways away. We're still back there. Is there anything else?
I think that it is appropriate for the trial court to take judicial notice, and we disagree about the record showing that, but I think the facts showed, as I've repeatedly stated, the facts showed the address. The trial court was requested specifically by the Commonwealth to take judicial notice, and he denied the motions. And it is a very fair inference to say that that is what the record shows. And I think in West, this court...
Counsel, yeah. Didn't the Court of Appeals say that the presumption could be based upon the fact that the detective said that they started out in the city of Norfolk, that when he talked about Fremont from where he was, he just said over there, which would indicate it's not very far, that the arrest happened in Norfolk, that there were Norfolk detectives doing this, that the indictment said it was in the city of Norfolk. So didn't they state those things as indicia
to
indicate that the presumption was correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Those are the points that the Court of Appeals pointed out in its factual finding, that there was still the burden of venue, which is a strong presumption burden, had been met based on all those. And,
you know, my good friend here is from down that way, all right, and I'm not. But even I know a short distance from downtown Norfolk can include Chesapeake and Newport News and Virginia Beach.
Well, it depends on how short it is.
Portsmouth.
Correct, Your Honor.
That's right, and Portsmouth.
And I think what's different about this case is that he did, the officer's exact testimony was over there. He kept saying, we drove over there, we returned over there. And that is how the Court of Appeals found from that it was a very short drive to the two locations, the first of which was, the officer explicitly testified, was in the city of Norfolk. You realize
that what's happening here is not your case, all right? It's the hundreds of cases that will follow, that we're trying to get a bright line or at least some guidelines of rules for trial courts and the Court of Appeals to follow when they're trying to determine if venue has been proven. So, you know, do I think it was in the city of Norfolk? You bet I do. I mean, on this record, that's what I think. Am I permitted to do that is the question.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the court is permitted to do that based on its previous holdings, and that you can look, if something is readily ascertainable from a map, you can take judicial notice of it. It's similar to if a date is readily ascertainable on a calendar. It's not commonly known that X date falls on a Monday, but if you can readily ascertain that, you can take judicial notice of it, and that's what you have in this case, and that's why this case may be different from a lot of other cases and can be specifically tailored to this case so that you can tell trial courts or other appellate courts, yes, if this is...
I guess the only dilemma I have is that you said if you can readily ascertain that it's enough. I don't think that's the rule. I think if you did readily ascertain it, that's enough. But there's our difference.
Yes, Your Honor. And this court also in West said, the failure clearly to prove venue is usually due to inadvertence flowing naturally from the familiarity of court, counsel, witnesses, and jurors with the locality of the crime. And appellate courts will generally and properly lay hold of and accept as sufficient any evidence in the case, direct or otherwise, from which that fact may be reasonably inferred. And the Commonwealth's argument is that that's likely what happened here. The trial court sitting in the city of Norfolk for an extended amount of time. Clearly, this record could be better. He could have just said, if the trial court had said, sure, I take judicial notice of that, we wouldn't be having this argument. And it's probably due to inadvertence that it didn't seem like that big of a deal. And unfortunately, we have a lesser record. But this record is still sufficient. And the reasonable inference looking at this record is that those two addresses are incredibly close together within the city of Norfolk and the territorial jurisdiction of the trial court. And alternatively, we would argue that this court can look at a map, any map in common use. Looking at the case law, I don't think it has to be an official map. It's a map that is commonly used. And proof of venue is, like this court is well aware, it's just a strong presumption. We would argue that the Court of Appeals found in its footnote that besides the issue of judicial notice, that there was enough, and this case should be affirmed.
Well, may I venture into whether or not we ought to do that and can do it?
Yes, sir.
What opportunity does the opposing party have in an appellate court to contest the accuracy? You say, well, excuse me, was that a map before part of Portsmouth was annexed? Or was that a map that was after... annexation of land from Newport News. Why should appellate courts be doing that?
I think appellate courts should be doing it in the interest of judicial economy. I think this court, I think even if this court finds that the Court of Appeals erred, it still has to do a harmless error analysis under 8.01678, and in the interest of judicial economy, this case clearly happened in the city of Norfolk.
I don't think I disagree with you.
And, Your Honor, I think that it shouldn't be set back for a remand based on that.
All right. Thank you very much.
If this court has any other
time
questions.
Time has expired.
Let me ask you a question. What's your understanding if we ruled against you on a venue issue as to whether or not that would be the ability to refile the defendant? That we just dismiss the charges against him? Or?
It would definitely go back. It would go back for a remand. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, both of you, for very nice arguments. Call the next case.